Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
The internet's full of true crime podcasts. More and more are added to the list every day. Figuring out where to start or where to go next can be overwhelming. But have no fear, I'm here to help. I'm Bob Ruff, and this is the place to find your next true crime binge. I'm joined today by, of course, Erica Cantor, and I know that her mother, Mrs. Cantor, is listening. Hello, Mrs. Cantor. And we are joined by Miss Vanessa, I'm going to get it right on the first try. Watch this. Gregoriadis.
Whoa, you're a genius. Wow.
Did you see that?
That's just an IQ test right there. So yeah.
I'm just as surprised as our listeners that he got that right.
Yeah. And that being said, I did ask for the pronunciation beforehand, but I still thought I was going to screw it up. And also, that'll be the last time I say your last name throughout the duration of this podcast. You get one.
Fair enough.
You're Vanessa G.
Yeah.
That's it. This is, I like, are you in like a, you're in like a studio. You seem like you're in like a.
We just created an actual studio. Can you believe it?
It's got like one of those windows.
It's got like a little window. Yeah. Look at this. There's,
I just saw a hand stick up from me.
That's really the luxury, right? The podcasting luxury is like somebody's actually going to help you with this recording. You're not going to just have to do it yourself and like hope it all goes for the best.
That's big time shit right there. There's another person in another room through a glass window that's doing all the controls. That's really something.
That's for real. I mean, to be fair, we don't do a lot of interviews like this, but I happen to be in the office. But, you know, the podcasts we make at Campside Media are pretty intricate. Like, there's lots of interviews and like tracking and then the pickups on the tracking and blah, 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 blah. And so, yeah, it does help.
Right. And I heard his voice right before we started. Who is that fella out there?
Can you say hi?
Hi, Ewan.
He's from New Zealand. You got to listen to this name. Ewan, tell them your name.
Nope. Wow. Nope. Just, I'm going to go with Ewan. That's it. That's all you get.
That's a tough one to spell.
Yeah. Couldn't even attempt to spell it. Yeah. And now I'm jealous and I need to make some upgrade. Even when I had a full-time producer, I still didn't have the cool, like.
I was just going to say, don't get any ideas, Bob.
No, when Mike was here, all he did was just sit right next to me and just tell me when I said words wrong.
He could have been doing that the whole time.
He would sit there with the script while I was reading. He'd be like, nope, do that over. I'm like, I think it was fine. It wasn't fine. I have to edit it. It wasn't fine. But I would have accepted that much more if you guys. So does he have like one of those buttons where he can like push the button and like talk to you while you're in there? And then is that what he just did?
He's got a button. He's got the whole thing. Yeah.
All right. So Ewan, tell me about yourself. Oh wait, it's Vanessa that we're interviewing today.
Next time.
Yeah, we'll have Ewan.
Life.
Ewan Lee.
Lie Tremulin.
Lie Tremulin. Ewan.
Recorded by Ewan Lie Tremulin. I've said it many times.
Yeah. Is he in the credits of the podcast?
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
That's a tongue twister for sure. So you Vanessa, where are you at now? I know that you grew up in New York City. I don't know where you're currently located.
I'm still here in New York City, born and bred.
Seems like an odd choice for Erica to write grew up in.
You know, I can only be as specific as the information I find. So that's all you got. Cannot confirm that she still lives there.
In your defense, you never put that she left. You just put grew up
True.
In.
True. Technically correct. That's the best kind of correct.
And you went to Wesleyan University, and you were
indeed.
And you went to you went to Harvard for a little while. And
oh my God, where did you get this information? I don't usually put that out there.
Erica's a creep.
It's a school in Boston.
Yeah. So it's fascinating, though. So you spent a year studying sociology of religion
at Harvard. True. Yes, I'm actually a Harvard Divinity School dropout. Which is not something a lot of people know. My husband has a master's degree, and whenever we're having an argument about anything, he's like, I don't know. I mean, you're a master's degree dropout. So I didn't do it. I mean, everybody I was at school with wanted to be either a pastor or had gotten totally screwed up by being raised by like evangelical parents or super fringy parents. You know, everybody was like, oh my God, I need to process these issues. And I was like, oh, I just thought this would be really interesting to study. So I wouldn't totally fit in there.
Yeah. I'm just really curious how you guys all got so fucked up about all this stuff.
You're just specimens for me to study. I wasn't planning to process it with you just like for fun. And I wrote like one too many papers on like, you know, the logos and the meaning of the logos in like the 17th century text versus the 19th century text. I was just like, whoa, I can't do this. And then you also need two languages to graduate from that school. So being that I barely have this language, I just didn't really think I could get both languages.
That's not your fault. That's not you, when you grew up with that last name, I feel like no teacher was going to like push you into learning a second language. They're like, she can't even spell her last name right.
Bob, how did that last name go again? Can you remind the listeners?
It's Gregoriadis.
Wow.
That is so good.
Two for two.
It's like a test for like, you know, brain cell death. It's like, say that name and then say it after 5 minutes after you've forgotten it.
Yeah. Well, lucky for me, I wrote it phonetically at the top of my note. Ooh. So I can just keep coming right back to it. Yeah. This doesn't have anything to do with anything about you, except for I feel like I saw somewhere that you do something with pop culture. That's right. You write long form pieces on pop culture.
Well, this is what's known about me. Not that I was a dropout from Harvard Divinity School.
Yeah, Erica rarely highlights the good points of your life. She tries to go after the little stuff. I see you got a D on a paper in
1993.
Listen, I watched a movie last night and I just want to wedge it in. And I feel like the fact that you studied sociology of religion and you write about pop culture. I just watched the Netflix movie You People last night. And anybody seen it? Anyone?
Not yet. No. That's the Jonah Hill one, right?
Yes. It's like everybody. Gosh. It's Eddie Murphy, Jonah Hill, Julia Louis Dreyfus, Andrew Schultz.
It looks hilarious.
Yeah.
Is it good?
It was pretty good. And it's, you know, there's a duality there is it's a white guy marrying a black woman. And there's like that dynamic between the families. But then also he's Jewish and she's Muslim. So there's another whole like dynamic there. And I just wanted to talk about it, but you guys didn't watch it. So it doesn't matter.
Well, the trailer I thought looked hilarious, Bob. So yeah.
It did look funny.
That's all I can help you with.
Yeah, I recommend it. Two thumbs up. Although I will say it is like the blueprint of the story is the same as every blueprint of every story that is like the families don't get along. Yeah. It's like as soon as like it started, like, you're like
meet the parents and
exactly.
Like, yeah, right.
Yep. 100%.
Okay, well, how about Tar? Have you guys seen Tar?
No.
What? What? I don't understand. Like, my head is exploding every time people tell me they haven't seen this movie. Cate Blanchett, and she's a conductor, like, for the, you know, Philharmonic, which I understand makes it sound like the most boring movie, like, in existence.
Yeah,
unfortunately, the marketing, like, doesn't get across that it is, like, creepy, weird, scary, like incredible comment on our culture today. Like everything about it is like acid trippy. You will not regret seeing this movie. I'm writing guarantee it down.
And as somebody who's probably watched every single horror movie that there is on streaming, I'm always looking for new creepy, spooky stuff. So,
yeah, I mean, okay, horror comes in later. It's okay if it's in it, yeah, but whatever. You will appreciate it.
Is it? Am I going to have to leave my house for this, or is this?
No,
it's streaming.
No. When do you ever have to leave your house?
No, I'm not going anywhere.
Nobody has to leave anymore.
How long does it take for a movie to get to streaming now? About a week and a half after it releases in the theaters.
That's right. It was not in the theaters.
Yeah,
it was in the theaters briefly for 3.5 days. Mm-hmm. But yes, I mean, I mention it because also it is very similar to the sort of stuff that I write about, which is she's basically like an art monster, like a pop culture monster. And like I am sort of known for doing that kind of stuff where it's like it's about a person who's very key to the culture and their like influence on the culture and also who that person is as a person, because I go, I hang out, I do like access journalism, right? So like I'm there hanging out with a person, really getting to know them. And it's like old school, long form, like Rolling Stone features. So generally these people are also sometimes in some sort of scandal, right? Okay. Like they're having some trouble because like I'm not generally their first choice of writer. Like, it's not like, oh, we can't wait to sit down with Vanessa. She's like the Oprah of interviewing. It's more like, okay, we have sort of an issue here and, you know, we need to get like a reporter who is, you know, well-respected and known to be very fair and, you know, but also interested in this kind of like getting in the muck with us, like really trying to look at what's going on. Like my most famous story, although I didn't interview her for it, was for the cover of Rolling Stone on Britney Spears when she was having her breakdown.
Oh, wait. She only had one breakdown?
But the big one, yeah. Bob. We all know.
The big one.
The big one.
The one, the one where she was airlifted out of her house, remember, to Cedar Sinai?
I should point out, I don't follow pop culture at all.
Yeah, I'm not either.
Is she still performing or what's going on with Britney? So that's what you do before podcasting, right? Is you're a journalist. According to Erica, you are an acclaimed journalist, and I don't know what that means. But you are acclaimed.
I won some fancy awards.
You won some fancy awards, and you do a lot of long form pieces on pop culture, youth movements, investigatory topics. Mm-hmm. It says you're a contributing writer at the New York Times Magazine and Vanity Fair.
Mm-hmm.
Do you did you have anything to do with today's Wordle word, or is that not? Am I the only one who still plays Wordle?
Yes,
I play Wordle. I feel very satisfied when I play Wordle.
I do too.
I'm very good at it. I think everybody thinks like I'm very good at Wordle. Like, everybody has that in common.
Well, there was a
and
little.
And then when you're not good at it, it's just bad luck, right?
Yeah.
Like when you have to do six tries or whatever, it's like, oh, that was just a bad word.
I'm currently on a streak of 30, I think 35 today, but there was a period like back this past fall where I thought that I might have had a stroke. I was going to go to because it was like in 1 week, there was like four in a row that I couldn't. I'm like, what is going on? What happened to me?
The question is, why do you get it the second time? Like, I think I've had 10 times where I got it right away. And I was like, how can this be happening? I don't understand.
And then the next one, the worst ones are the ones where you think it's obvious. Like you, like on your first, like by the second line, you've got like APPY and you're like, well, this will be easy. And then it's like every single possibility. Tries. Yeah.
Right.
Also, I don't know if that word has five different variations that end in APPY, but you know what I mean?
I don't remember what word you said, so.
Yeah, any of them. But it's always words like that where it's like it could be happy, slappy, you know, it's like it could be exactly. Any of those.
Yeah.
And so you also wrote a book, a whole book called Blurred Lines.
It was a whole book, yeah.
Yeah, you would do magazines, you'd do this, but this was an entire book. It has a beginning, a middle, and an end, and it's called Blurred Lines, Rethinking Sex, Power, and Consent on Campus. Tell us about that.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's not totally a happy story because I wrote a book about Me Too about 6 months before Me Too started.
Oh.
So it seems like I sort of lost the, you know, the moment there, like passed me by. It was really unfortunate. But basically, I, again, cover story writer, write a lot about scandal or different things in pop culture. Do you remember the woman who was carrying the mattress around Columbia University to protest her sexual assault?
Yeah.
So I wrote a cover story for New York Magazine about her called, like, A New Type of Sexual Revolution on Campus. And it was basically, it was like, what, 2015? And I spent a lot of time up there talking to her and her friends and realized, like, these young people, like young millennials, were totally redefining what consent was and the big issue in the whole sexual assault debate that has, like, consumed the culture until now when everybody apparently decided it's over, is, like, not interested. Like, don't talk to me about Jeffrey Epstein. I don't want to hear about it. But you know, that big debate that we had, the whole issue is that nobody is defining these words. Like, I have a different definition of sexual assault, rape, consent, blah, 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 than you guys do. Like, nobody has the same one. Mm-hmm. And so young people, particularly young women on campus, were saying, like, let's all have this definition and trying to, like, make everybody else agree. But there was so much confusion over what it was. So that was, like, the thesis of the book. And it was going to – this was a major cultural moment and everybody better watch out because it's going to change everything. And to be totally honest, what happened was – and I think I was right about, like, the timing. But then Rolling Stone had that crazy story about UVA where the woman had made the whole story up. Remember that?
Yeah.
And that sort of, like, shifted everything in the news cycle and made it so my book sort of, I think, came out at the wrong time. Anyway, I missed the trend there for the first time. I was real mad at myself. but it's good. It's like a really – it's a very – it was supposed to be – I mean, I wrote it as a book that everybody can read. And that doesn't mean it's, like, eighth grade level. It's just written for, like, men and women and people who are older and have kids in school and, like, breaks down all the philosophical issues. And it's a feminist point of view. Like, I essentially, like, I side with them, but I show all the different arguments and why some of them are flawed.
Yeah, it sounds interesting. I actually may pick up a copy myself because
educate yourself.
Well, and I have teenagers, so I have my son is about to graduate high school and he's about to go to Michigan State, and then my daughter's a junior in high school and she's looking to go to college, and it's and we have these conversations, and it is interesting because it's, I hesitate to say it's a different time, but like when I was in high school in the 90s, like very particularly that it's kind of defining what consent meant, because it felt like in my youth it felt okay then to, if someone said no, to just keep asking until they said,
right,
you know what
course.
I mean,
yeah,
and it was like, well, yeah, eventually she said yes, so there was consent. There was consent,
right.
You know, and that seemed very normal then, and then now, of course, you know, like no, that's not okay, and I don't want my son thinking that's okay, and I also don't want my daughter thinking that's okay. You know, so
it's a
super interesting
it's a complete
topic.
Redefinition of, like, sexual behavior, basically, you know,
yeah,
in a good way, like in a good way. And as, like, silly as some of that rhetoric is, it's not like it's not powered by, like, good, solid thinking, you know, about how, like, we should treat each other morally. It just gets so messed up when it gets in the media, because then the media is like, you know, oh my God, it's woke snowflakes, or like, oh my God, like, it's, you know, like, frat boy assholes, you know, and people are always more complicated.
Yeah. And I definitely see, like, people just are kind of, I guess, a kind of, like, understanding what you're talking about with, like, people who don't really understand all of the specifics to that definition of consent, you know, about how is consent given, it can be withdrawn, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But, and, like, that might surprise some people to realize how few people, especially, you know, a few couple decades ago, really thought that way. But then when you look at, like, the laws that some were still in place until, like, the early 2000s in some states, where marital rape wasn't even a crime. There was no such thing in some states as marital rape. So, and that's, you know, some of those laws lasted obviously far, far too long, but it's, I think it's really reflective of what you're talking about with people in general in society, not really.
Oh, the car from Carvana's here. Well, will you look at that? It's exactly what I ordered, like precisely. It would be crazy if there were any catches, but there aren't, right?
Right, because that's how car buying should be. With Carvana, you get the car you want. Choose delivery or pickup and a week to love it or return it.
Buy your car today with
Carvana.
Delivery or pickup fees may apply. Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.
Even fully understanding the concept of consent.
Right. Yeah. And it all is about laws, right, in the end. I mean, our whole country is like, that's what really matters.
Yeah. And I think you hit it on the head when you talk about like the media gets a hold of it and just kind of ruins everything. Because that was always my perspective on like the Me Too movement. It's like it started. It was a revolution that needed to happen and a revelation that needed to happen for people. And then it's like it jumped the shark. It went because like as you said, it's kind of like it just kind of went away now. And it was like it was made so extreme and polarizing. Instead of us, you know, by the media, that there stopped being a conversation about it. And like everything else, it's like, well, you got to pick a side. And then it's very easy once you do that to point out the flaw, you know, obvious flaws in one side or the other. And the next thing, and then, you know, I got a soapbox. I should not even get I get so pissed off about like blind party loyalty, like during the Democratic nominations, I had my picks. Of course, so it's not just being a sore sport, but it was like why in the middle of the Me Too movement, you nominate, why do we nominate the guy that has seven sexual assault allegations against him when we had this great pool of people that we could have chosen from?
Right.
And then it was like the media kind of is like, okay, well now, he's on our team though, so we're just going to stop talking about it altogether and boom, Me Too movement's gone. It's over.
Yep. Well, no, but Biden, it's much more complicated than that with Biden because he was a real like booster of all of these, you know, assaulted people while he's simultaneously like very sort of handsy himself. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I tend to think like when somebody is telling you, when a politician is telling you who he or she or they are, like you'd best like, you know, not take that to heart, it's always sort of the opposite.
How do you know a politician's lying? Their lips are moving,
right? Yes, exactly.
And they all have like bad. I mean, look, Matt Gaetz is still in Congress. I mean, it's like insane. Like, I can't believe that. Like, I thought he was gonna go to prison. Is he still gonna go to prison, or he's just gonna chill there for a while?
I can't even watch national news anymore because I'm very like independent and I'm just like both part. And if you live in that space, very like try to be very neutral. It's like every news you see is like, well, it's like we're going to spin it our way. We're going to spin it our way. And it was like these classified documents thing that had come out. This isn't a political show. I don't even know what I'm doing. But it was like, it's like Trump did it. That's the most irresponsible thing in the world. And we need to get rid of him. You know, he needs to go to jail. And it's like, oh yeah, Biden did it too. It's like, I don't know if it's that important anymore now.
Yeah, exactly.
My only hope is that this creates some sort of a reset and maybe Mayor Pete takes another run. I really liked Pete Buttigieg. He lived 5 minutes from where I live now. Like, let's just, you know what, let's just kind of.
That in itself is a reason to make him president.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's just clean the slate. Let's start over. Yeah. Let's get some young blood in there.
For endorsing candidates, I'm a Cory Booker fan. So.
Oh, I like Booker too. Yeah, I like Booker a lot too. And then what is his wife's name?
Very
famous actress.
I love her so much. I love her so much too. She plays Ahsoka.
Dawson is her last
yes.
name.
Yes, Rosario Dawson.
Rosario
Dawson.
You guys, oh,
boom, we made it. We figured it out.
Oh, okay, all right. Yeah. I was like, what? Why do you guys know who Corey Booker's wife is? It's yes. really esoteric, like. She's but she's famous a famous actress. Yeah. I got it. Yeah. Okay, I got
and
it.
She's very much an activist. It would be like a great yes. first lady. It'd be perfect. I'd be fine right. with any of those.
Oh, she's awesome. Yeah.
Someone besides sure. every single human that we have in Congress. Let's get rid of all of them and then start over. Anyway, that's the political hour on True Crime Mitch for some fucking reason. I don't know why that even
political corner over. Yeah.
The thing is, Vanessa, I work in this office by myself. This is my only chance to have a conversation with other people. And so,
but that's good. That's how that keeps you like fresh, right? For the
oh, real fresh,
like,
yeah.
don't let him talk to anybody else all day.
That's what it is. Oh, I haven't man. Seen another human in 3 days. And I'm like, hey, I know you're here to talk about your podcast, but here's three things I have on my mind lately. Let's talk about that.
I was literally, before we started this interview, I was going to like almost jokingly pitch to you, Bob, that we need to do like a pre-chat like you do for the like the follow-ups or whatever for Truth and Justice, because we end up just talking about so much random shit while our guests just kind of like sit there and nod their heads. And luckily, Vanessa, you're very involved, so that's not an issue. But
right. We did do one of those.
I'm going to check this out. I need to, yeah.
Yeah. One of our recent episodes, like you and I had like a 10-minute conversation while the guest was just like.
Aren't you guys like super into true crime? Or it's just you just doing that like as the title just because like you know people like true crime? And they'll,
it's a true crime like... show. It's supposed to be. Erica's into true crime. I'm not.
Well, it's good you're hosting this show together.
Yeah. I'm in like this weird place where I like host two true crime podcasts and I don't listen to I listen to comedy podcasts. I like that.
I have a very hard time listening to true crime podcasts too. I have to be. I like it. As a writer like of these podcasts, uh-huh. I find that you like somebody has to have a gun. Like somebody needs to be dead. It is so hard to write these cliffhangers. Like I have this. So I have my new show that I'm on here to promote called Infamous.
Oh wait, you have a podcast?
Everybody yeah. should just know about. Just
for
a sec.
30 minutes into the interview.
But in any case, it's like all these mini series, right? So they're like 3 or 4 or 5, 6 episode long. Stories that are just like true crime podcasts, but they're shorter, rolling into each other. But they're all supposed to be about scandal. So we did one that's about like Tori Burch and her husband, right? And they have a big fight and they break up, but he still like owns a part of her company and he decides to knock her off. And it's all like, you know, snap, snap, snap. He's knocked her off. She has like an identical boutique to hers. Oh my God, what's going to happen? And we rewrote this thing like 150 times. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I know what the problem is. There's no dead body here.
Right.
We're just talking about a boutique. That's why it's so boring. Right. You know?
How do you make it not boring?
Not boring is death.
My problem with true crime podcasts is I don't like listening to things and realizing how much better at it they are than I am. And this is my job. I'm just like, oh, well, that's better than – I don't want to hear somebody do a better job at it than me.
Maintain your ego in ignorance.
Yeah. I said, I don't talk to anybody. I don't do social media. I don't talk to anybody. I live out in the middle of the country by myself. My whole family's gone all day long. And then I just convince myself that I'm the greatest podcaster that ever lived.
Give us some real Ted Kaczynski vibes there, Bob.
Yeah.
It's like you need a documentary about yourself. It would be a very short documentary.
You're right, Vanessa. You're goddamn right. I need a documentary.
But it's a cringe documentary. It's like, look at this guy. He's just all alone, pacing around.
Okay, back to it.
There's nothing to my life. We just had a Hulu show came out last week or 2 weeks ago, and one of the episodes was about me in a case.
He
that
says
I did.
We. It's just him.
yeah, just me. But they came out here to, you know, they shot for 3 days, and they're like, "What do you do?" I'm like, "This. I just sit here." I'm like, "What do you do when you're not here?" I'm like, I hike and camp and hunt sometimes.
Love people who are podcasters, though. Sorry, what were you saying?
Yeah. Well, they had like wedged that in, and it was so cringy. Like, people loved the show, but they were like, because like one of my hobbies is I'm a hunter. Is they're like, well, we should make a metaphor about you, you know, investigating cold cases and you being a hunter. And I kept arguing with the producer when she was, I'm like, that's stupid. I don't want to do that at all. And they're like, why don't you get your backpack out and start going through stuff on the table?
Well, they just want some B-roll. They don't want like you sitting there in your red shirt, looking at them, you know, they want like, but here's my question. Okay. I really want to ask this. And I feel like you guys might have some thoughts on this. Like, why is it important to solve these cold cases that are 40 or 50 years old? Like, it's for these individual families to have justice, but don't we have like way bigger societal issues that we need to like fix now? And like, do these people, like, maybe it's better for the families to be like, you know what, I'm fine not thinking about this right now. Like, I actually feel okay about it. Yeah. You know, like, because we come across people when we go to interview people are like, no, dude, I don't want to talk about this. Actually, right. I don't want a podcaster trying to solve my kid's double murder of my kid and his friend from like 1980, you know? Mm-hmm.
Well, Steve, from my perspective, because on my other show is Truth and Justice, and we investigate wrongful conviction, potential wrongful conviction
that
cases.
Is important. That is definitely important.
And even like the cold cases, you'd be surprised. Like, I would assume other creators wouldn't take a case, like just one they're interested in. Like, cause like, I know like me, I get 100 emails a week from people begging me to look into their case. Right. And so I certainly wouldn't go be like, I'm going to go this one where no one wants me involved
one.
Yeah,
right.
But that's I think I don't know, cause I don't do cold cases. They're cold, but they're wrongful conviction cases. I think it's just because there's like access. Cause like, nope, the police don't care. You know what I mean? Like as a creator or a journalist, it's very, and I'm sure you've probably experienced this. Maybe you haven't. I don't know what you do but you know, like, there's like an active investigation going on. The police are like, "Fuck off! We're not giving you. We're not going to tell you anything." You know, so there's no story there. So I think that's
right.
You know, so I think some people just have a genuine curiosity and want to talk about it, and then make podcasts and stuff about it. And then others are just like, "Well, this is accessible, and there's an audience for it, so I'm going to do it." And it's very hard to create anything current.
Right. No, so that's true.
I think there's also something like to be said about you kind of learn something from, you know, older or more historical cases that you know, in investigating those cases, you might learn something that's going to help, you know, solve a different case or solve a more, you know, modern case. And, you know, there's so many people out there, right, at least right now in this true crime space that's doing, you know, podcasting and looking into these cases that I think, you know, some people, like, there's just so many people and there's so many cases. So if some people want to do older cases, we've got enough people doing some of these modern ones, too, or at least I think we will in the near future.
I just feel like why isn't there the same energy around like talking about why our healthcare system is so fucked up and like all our parents are dying penniless and like all the horrible things that are happening in terms of like people dying like right now, you know, around us. Like, I feel like that is also like, you know, there's business like corruption, basically, that doesn't play well in podcasting, that is really like interesting to look into, investigative, very serious and important to people learning about like what's going wrong with our government. And it's so hard to get people to listen to that stuff.
Well, you know, I think at least for me, from like my perspective, because like I'm super, I'm like wedging conversations into a true crime podcast about some like issues.
Right.
I think it's because of like what I mentioned earlier. At least like for me, everything is so polarized, and there's so much tribalism that it's so hard. I had a podcast with a friend of mine named Zach Weaver. It was called Bob and Weave, and we did it for like a year. And it was like we're both like super, very, very independent politically. And was like, let's promote like open conversation and about, you know, and it was like, it just, like you said, nobody wanted to listen to it because everybody, you know, the overwhelming majority of the public is like, I'm either on team A or team B, and my team's great and your team sucks and your team will, everything your team does is wrong and everything my team does is right. And nobody really, I feel like people have lost the ability to listen anymore. So for me, like,
they just want to listen to like dead women from 1979 in ditches and like, let's find who did it. Like, that's like the thing that brings the country together.
Yeah. It's weird because, yeah, they will listen to that and they won't listen to the other because they don't want nobody. For me, like, it's just exhausting. I mean, I'm in my 12th season of Truth and Justice, and the contrarian crowd grows over and over every season. There's more and more people that like, and I'm to the point, like, I was just thinking the other day, like, after this season, like, I want to take a break. Like, maybe I just want to talk about I literally was thinking, maybe I just want to do like a cold case, like a missing person just for one season, just for a breather. Cause I'm tired of the bullshit that I get back. And it would just have to be so exhausted because the fact is nobody wants to hear that they're wrong. It's so hard to find people that are like, I actually want to hear your perspective and maybe I am wrong about this thing. It's so hard to find people to do that. So I wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. I tried once and it just stopped.
Everybody's just so like, everybody takes everything so personally. It's like, if you don't agree with my opinions, that is a personal attack on me. And I just don't understand.
See, this is just like, this is when I feel really like I don't belong in this world. Cause like I grew up in New York City, as we all know, grew up in New York City.
Yeah, still there.
But like sort of the way people are, right? Like the whole thing is about arguing and like you say your opinion, I'll say my opinion, we'll get it all out there. And then, you know, we'll come to some sort of compromise and move along. Like that's sort of like, you know, it's almost like a very Israeli way of being, right? Like outwardly aggressive, but this idea that, you know, well, that's how you break bread. It's like you're honest, you know? Mm-hmm. And just everybody just yelling at each other just feels to me like it's a protective measure that people use to like keep themselves like from getting too close to anybody, right? Because you don't really have to engage with people if you're that tribal. And then you just like stay at home and feel lonely and go on social media and like buy random stuff that you don't need that like, you know, whatever, can't like go in a landfill. Believe me, I'm not like some big environmentalist, but I'm just like saying that it's like, you know, like you gotta, I mean, I'm like in the middle of like cleaning out my mom's apartment and I'm just like, I can't believe how much random stuff is in every closet here. And like, what is this? Like, you can't just like have like, you just get old and then your kids are just like, well, here's all this stuff. I guess I'll just throw it in the dumpster. I mean, what is that?
Oh, and then there's crazy. That. And I swear we're going to talk about the podcast here in just a second. But there's,
having a good time. We don't have to talk about the podcast. I mean,
it's called Infamous.
Don't tell my partners I said that. They'll be like,
podcast
what?
Called Infamous. We'll talk about it. But blah, like, because there's this other piece that I've been through with family members where like I was so mad at my uncle. Well, it was my aunt actually. So my uncle passed away years ago that I was very close to. And my aunt for like 20 years, like kept all of his stuff and his memorabilia. And then I was out in Colorado visiting her and she's just like, I'm just ready to let this go. And I think I want you to have it all. And so she gives me these boxes of stuff.
You were like, no.
And at first I was like, oh, that's amazing. And it was a whole thing. Cause like I was a fireman and he was a fireman and it was like, you know, so like, and then I go through it and there's like some of that stuff in there, but then there's like all the birthday cards he wrote to her and there's all this stuff in here and like weird trinkets and stuff. And I called her. I'm like, you bitch. Like, I know exactly what you were doing. You couldn't bring yourself to throw it away. So you gave it to me.
Yeah.
So that now I have to be the asshole that is going to decide whether or not to throw it away. It was hard. Like, I had like this hard, like really bad emotional moment, like with my wife, where I was like putting stuff in like a trash can. She had his shoes in there that he was wearing when he died. And there's like specks of like blood on his shoe.
Oh,
and she's just
God.
Like, and his wallet that he had in his pocket, like the stuff the hospital gave him when they left.
Right.
And I was like, what the fuck do I do with this? I feel like an asshole for throwing it away, but why?
So
now,
what did you do?
Yeah.
I threw it away.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, you got to throw it away.
But I did, but it was, it was like this whole like very emotional thing. I was like, and my wife, you know, bless her, was like, listen, I think she gave it to you so you could throw it away because she couldn't. And I'm like, well, that's right. Great, but I don't want to throw it away either.
But see, through millennia, people had these things called family heirlooms, right?
Yeah.
Like, so it was like this china, these like four forks, and like you would like wrap them all up, and that was like, that's what we give. Now the other stuff gets thrown away, and you just don't have that much of the other stuff, right? Because you're like basically like, you know, a monkey or something. And like now we've created the situation where like people don't even like really know what is a family heirloom anymore. Like nobody's really taking care of them.
Well, everything's like disposable now, too.
I guess this cup was from my grandma. I'm not sure. You know? So, like,
I've also now, heard, though, like, the millennials are, like, at least when it comes to, like, the fine china, like you said earlier, like, that we're literally just, like, why? Like, what's the point of having, like, fancy plates that you only eat on once a year? And then you just look at them the rest of the year. So I think about, a lot of it, too, is just, like, we're becoming more utilitarian.
Yeah, well, and everything's on Amazon and it's cheap and it's disposable. Yeah, I was just at my parents the other day, and it's funny you said china because they have this big, remember china cabinets? Mm-hmm. Like they have this big china cabinet
display.
Full of all this stuff that came from like their parents and my grandparents. And I just walked by and looked at them like, oh, son of a bitch. One day I'm going to be the guy that's like, I don't want all this bullshit. Like, I don't want this. What do I throw it away? What do I do with it?
Right. Yeah.
Give it to my brothers.
Oof.
Yeah.
It's bad. Yeah.
So you started Campside Media. You're a co-founder.
We're back to my bio. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to remind you.
We're basically all magazine journalists. I mean, I'm loath to use the word former. We do write for magazines from time to time, but you may have noticed there aren't magazines anymore.
Yeah. I was like, where do you find these magazines nowadays?
Yeah, where do you find such things? So there's one guy who's sort of like the guy who writes for Outside, and like he's really into like missing people in the mountains and like weird like con stories. And then there's like a more serious guy who does a lot of social justice. And like if you heard Suspect, did you guys hear Suspect?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's our podcast from my partner, Matt Scher. Chameleon Hollywood Con Queen, which I did with the Outside magazine guy, Josh Dean, which was a case – all these women in Hollywood, these very, very high-ranked female executives, like the one who was in the Sony hack where you found out all these gross, like, personal things about her, they were all being impersonated by somebody. And, like, this guy was, like, calling all these people who worked in Hollywood and inviting them to Indonesia to work on a movie. And they would fly there. And then they would get there, and he would just, like, screw with them through different like taxi drivers or people would drive them around and they'd just like take little bits of money from them. And then there was like no movie. But he was doing this over the phone, like impersonating over the phone, pretending to be these women. And it was a case nobody had solved. And Josh and I solved that case. Thank you very much.
See, it was a cold case and you guys solved it.
It was a cold case. It was actually not at all a cold case because the not so secret part of it is like we had gotten tipped off that we're going to solve this case. So we were like, oh, dope. We're going to make a podcast about it. And we'll make the podcast because we specialize in these like serial, you know, 8 to 12 episode podcasts. We were like, awesome. We'll start making the podcast. We'll be like 5 or 6 episodes in. They'll solve the case. Then we'll put the ending on and then we'll release the podcast. And everybody was like, yes, this is a great plan. Awesome. Start working on it. Months go by. We're working like every day, working really hard. Oh, my God, there's this little thing called COVID. What's happening? People seem to have to stay home.
C-19er.
Oh, no. And then it's like the guy who was going to be arrested, we knew he was in England. So suddenly it's like, well, you can't arrest somebody in England, bring them to America and put them in American jail where they're going to get COVID, right? So they stopped, all the law enforcement like stopped whatever plan they had to go arrest the guy. And so Josh and I were like, whoa, no, but you need to tell us who it is. You said you would tell us. And they just like stopped returning our calls. And then Josh was just like, I'm going to figure this out. And I was like, Josh, there's no way you're going to figure this out. And we figured it out in like 2 minutes. We figured it out like literally in 2 minutes. Like there was a guy who was like one of the victims who was like, oh, I have a copy of the passport that the guy like sent me at one point. And we were like, oh, this is a fake name. And we gave it to a hacker. Well, we didn't know it was a fake name, but we were like, oh, it has a name. We gave it to a hacker. And like literally 2 minutes later, the guy was like, this is your guy. And we looked at his Instagram and we were like, oh my God, this is definitely a crazy guy who is like an impersonator, you know, like there's no question. And anyway, so he was arrested recently. But so that was sort of like those have been our two big like major successes. Mm-hmm. But we have like, you know, probably up to 20 other podcasts out. We have one called The Evaporated, which is Jake Edelstein, who is the guy who wrote the book Tokyo Vice, which was made into a TV show recently. And The Evaporated is about this trend in Japan that tens of thousands of people just evaporate themselves, disappear off the grid, wipe out everything, bank accounts, like don't talk to their families, social security numbers, just like move into these like weird areas of Japan. And it's just like a known thing that you can do. And the people who help you do it are called night movers. Like it's a really interesting kind of cool
job
podcast.
Creative question.
I mean, why? People just want to get away.
Well, no, I want to know why
you're
going to
do it one day too. Your family's going to come home and you're going to be like, what? We thought he would just podcast all day forever.
I just want to know why you didn't name the podcast Night Movers.
I know we could have. Yeah. Well, the Evaporated is pretty cool.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
It's solid.
It's a franchise. So it's like, then there's going to be The Evaporated. The guy who wrote Generation Kill, who's also a former Rolling Stone writer, is going to be making a podcast about like another, actually also a cold case. We do a lot of cold cases.
Sounds like you are really into the cold cases, if you ask me.
I personally don't like,
I don't know why people are listening to our
podcast. I mean, I do these scandal stories. So my podcast, Infamous, is like, it's basically a lot of my sort of back catalog. So when Nexium, I mean, you guys know Nexium, right? Like they got into a lot of trouble. Right. And right before they got into all this trouble, they were like, we should have an article. And so the word went out, like Nexium's interested in having an article. And I was like, all right, well, that sounds good to me. Like, that sounds really interesting. I would like to hear what the cult has to say for themselves. What is going on with this branding? Like, what's happening?
Yeah.
So they're like, cool, you can come to Albany and interview Keith and everybody else. And I was like, great. And then like 2 days before I was supposed to go, they were like, oh, actually, you need to go to Guadalajara, Mexico, because that's where Keith is.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was like, oh, okay. So I flew
to Guadalajara.
And
that's Keith Raniere, the Nexium.
Keith Raniere. Like canary.
That's what I said. Raniere.
Raniere.
Now, I may have got that wrong, but let's not forget Gregoriadis.
Gregoriadis. Yes. Yeah. So that was like, a sort of story of them, like the last days of that cult and how they were trying to manage this situation and all the horrible things that they did. And then Infamous sort of starts with my experience going on tour with Girls Gone Wild and Joe Francis, who was the leader of Girls Gone Wild. Do you guys know about him? Do you know anything about him?
Oh,
you
only know. From Erica's research.
I did my research, but it was I definitely don't feel like I was like following this as it was happening or anything like that. Like I don't feel like a very surface level knowledge of this.
Well, you're a little young for that. Like for
have some Girls Gone Wild knowledge. I think
the infomercials
in the noggin.
Like I remember the infomercials. Yeah, yeah.
You couldn't watch TV without for $10.99.
Get that, like, you hear
Girls
that beach
Gone
music.
Wild.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like
and everyone
was like, God damn it, here we go again.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and there was like there was like comedy shows like spoof it because like the commercials were like, check out Girls Gone Wild, wee, real girls going wee, and then they're like,
there's a Larry David, there's like a Curb Your Enthusiasm where Larry's trying to order them with like a fake voice, like I would like to get the video of the girls going wild.
And so that, though, when you started, and again, I feel like we're doing a terrible job with this. The podcast is called Infamous. And in the first series, because you just launched in November of last year, November 2022, right?
Correct, yeah.
And the first series was on Joe Francis of Girls Gone Wild. Now, you just said, I think I heard you just say, that you were on tour with them?
I mean, I was not one of the wild girls. I was a writer for Rolling Stone. I was a writer for Rolling Stone, and I was, at the time – young, right? Like I was in my 20s and They had asked me to do like a story on groupies and Slipknot groupies. And I was like, no. What?
Yeah,
that
sounds
no.
awful.
Slipknot? And I was talking with the editor. And I was like, well, what else do you have? You know, which is sort of the way you get these assignments. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about like, well, what could be interesting? And he was like, well, who's behind this whole Girls Gone Wild thing? Like, I don't even understand. Like, what is this? Who is this guy? Who's this evil genius that gets them to take their tops off? And I was like, I don't know. I'll make a phone call. And figured out it was this, you know, other guy in his 20s, Joe Francis. And he was like, come to Florida. So I flew down to Panama City Beach, hung out with him. He was arrested while I was there because Joe Francis, one thing we know about him is he gets arrested a lot.
Yeah
like this long
like a
list
lot.
Of charges.
And yeah, so I got to see like the whole, you know, scam, which was basically like, girls, be liberated, take your tops off. And if you're really cute, maybe you should flirt with me. And if I really like you, maybe you want to come back with me to my hotel room. This is, I'm like being Joe, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, come back to my hotel room. And like, wouldn't it be great if you just like kissed your friend and we videotaped it? And then like, maybe you and I can have sex. And it was just like, these are like, I will not say they're underage, although there is, you know, a very famous legal case where they are. But like, you know, let's call them 18, 19-year-olds,
mm-hmm.
like who are drunk and who are not like as sophisticated as Joe, right, who's already graduated from USC and blah, 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 blah. But like, you know, every teenage girl knows like, you know, sometimes like random shit happens and like you're with these guys. I was like, so I worked at like a Hallmark card store when I was like 15. Well, I don't think I should say how young I was. I worked in a Hallmark card store when I was overage, and like Colin Quinn came in and like took all me and my friends out, like to a nightclub into like his house. Like that is crazy. Like I look back on that now and I'm like, what was that? You know?
Mm-hmm.
But all teenage girls know, like, there's some wild and weird night can happen with older guys where you suddenly find yourself in a situation where you're like, wow, this is really weird, but maybe sort of fun. And, like, maybe I should roll with it, but my friend wants to go home, but I'd like to roll with it. And, like, you know, just weird things do happen like that. And the difference here was, of course, that, like, there was a camera. You know, it was commercial. Like, it was basically Joe's argument legally was like, this is a documentary. Like, I make a documentary on women's breasts and they show their breasts. So I'm protected, you know, free speech. And everybody else was like, but it seems like, you're making them do this. And it's very much about consent, right? Like, where does the consent end? Like, is it when the girl is like puking in the street? You know,
right.
Like, what's.
Yeah.
And like, do they know what's in the release form that you're having them sign?
Yeah, when they're shit-faced like, drunk and just sign something.
Right. And like somebody like you, you have a daughter, right? You were saying you have a daughter.
Yep.
Like Joe was in part brought down by like the dads of America, right? Oh, no, you're not doing that to my kid, you know?
I was just going
to
say, yeah, like if my daughter were to end up on – one of those, there would be some hell to pay from me, and I'm a cold case investigator. I will find you.
Allegedly. But you know, for Joe, there's actually like open cases. Like he's in Mexico with open warrants in the United States.
Yeah.
So
that's what I was wondering, like, where it got left off. So he's still, as far as we know, he's still in Mexico.
He is, as far as we know, still in Mexico. Yeah.
Yeah, I think he served married, like almost a year in jail for one of the charges. And
yeah,
he's got warrants and he's hiding in
Mexico. He's got like this crazy assault in L.A., like physical assault charge. But he also, you know, he married, they did a tour, Girls Gone Wild tour, not the one I was on. And it was for the hottest girl in America. And when they found the hottest girl, he married that girl. And so she's a mother to his children, and she claims physically assaulted her. She claims he physically assaulted her, and she is now living in Oklahoma with the kids, right? So he's like, he wants the kids back, but he can't really come into the U.S. Like, if he's driving, like, he would be arrested, you know? So I don't know. It's a It's like sort of a sad and scary story that I tried to do in a way that had some levity because it is also quite like ridiculous, you know, because it's Girls Gone Wild.
Right.
And I have to be honest, like when I was, you know, down there, like observing what was happening, it's not like I thought, you know, everybody's being raped right and left. Like I saw like, you know, a lot of women who wanted to do this and girls who wanted to do it. And then it was just more like there were some who didn't, who were then pressured, you know.
Right. And I think some of that has to, and you get, I don't want to speak for your experience, but I think some of that has to be going back to where we started this whole conversation, which was back in like the late 90s and early 2000s, what we thought consent meant and what was okay. You know, for, you know, if you're seeing somebody like, yeah, they agreed to do it and they do it, what's wrong with that? And not really understanding the power dynamic, you know, difference, and the fact that they're intoxicated, and they're not capable, you know, capable of consenting when you're in that. You know, there's a lot of things that I think a lot of people weren't really thinking about back then. It was just, you know, so
And I think the thing about Girls Gone Wild that people don't like, they think like, oh, it was just people flashing, and then maybe the girls who were hooking up were like, you know, paid performers or I don't know what they were. Like, they were the same girls. Do you know what I mean? Well, they do. Though, of course, there were, like, professionals in there, too, and more and more as time went on. They put professionals in there. But, like, the girls who were flashing then turned into those other girls, you know? And that, like, processed by what – because they wanted to get them in the hotel room, right? So it was private. They could control it. They could get really good video. But, like, that's where it's just, like – come on. Like, it's one thing to take advantage of people, like, on the street, maybe, like, oh, go over there and kiss your girlfriend or something. It's another thing to be like, let me get you on this makeshift porn set. Can you just sit right there? The light's really good. But it's just a documentary, guys, you know?
Just, it literally is, like, making me ill to my stomach to think of, like, my daughter on spring break and some guy, you know, finding her drunk and then convincing her to do something that she'll regret having done later.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, I will find you. I don't have any particular set of skills. But
you got those cold case skills, remember?
Yeah, right, yeah. I have cold case skills, and I'm a very large, scary man. With that, we're running long because we talked about nonsense a lot of the time, but I want to remind everybody that her name is Vanessa Grigoriadis.
Yay. Right?
Yep. And the podcast is called Infamous. It came out in November. They've already had a series on, as we're just talking about, Joe Francis and The Girls Gone Wild. Are you still currently covering the NXIVM?
The NXIVM one, yes. It's still up. And yeah, it is still going, that part of the series.
Can you give us a hint of what the next series on the show is going to be? Or do you
the
know?
Next one is about Judith Miller, who's the reporter at The New York Times, who misreported the Iraq war and led us into a war that you could argue just ended when Afghanistan, we pulled out. It's about like sort of the mistakes that were made, like at the highest levels of journalism that led us into that war.
Awesome. So again, her name is Vanessa Grigoriadis. The podcast is called Infamous. I'm going to say it three more times. Infamous, infamous, because we didn't talk about it the whole time. It's called Infamous.
It's not Infamous America. It's just called Infamous. Another one. Yeah, don't listen to that other one.
Infamous. If you see Infamous and it's hosted by Vanessa with a last name that looks a little scary for you to try and pronounce, that's the one. Check it out. It could be your next big true crime binge. Vanessa, thanks so much. This has been a great conversation. Thank you so much for joining
us. Yeah, awesome to talk to you. Thank you so much. This was definitely the most fun I had today.
True Crime Binge is an NBI Studios production and is distributed by Audioboom. Produced and edited by Kelly Behrens-Brink. Our production manager and co-host is Erica Cantor. Music and show artwork was created by Shane Yoder of PutThemInASong.com, and episode artwork is created by John Hayes. Our website, TrueCrimeBinge.com, was created by Katie Ross of CreatedInTandem.com. If you're a listener and would like to recommend a future guest or a podcaster that would like to request an interview, you can do so right on our website. And again, that web address is TrueCrimeBinge.com.
If you're enjoying the show, please do me a huge favor and take a minute to rate and review us on iTunes or whatever platform you're using to listen. Make sure you give us a follow on social media. We can be found everywhere at True Crime Binge. And thank you so much for listening. And make sure you tune in next Wednesday morning for another podcaster, another case, and another True Crime Binge.